August is here, and it has that Sunday of summer kind of feeling. It's a moment to slow down, reset, and prepare for the busy fall season. And a great place to start with that transition is with your wardrobe. There's no better place to do that than Quince. Their clothing is a reminder that you don't need to crowd your closet with endless new pieces. You just need the right high-quality essentials. Quince specializes in effortless staples, from organic cotton t-shirts to Mongolian cashmere sweaters. I personally recommend their washable silk slip dress. Pair it with a blazer for work, then wear it straight out to dinner. Everything Quince makes is priced 50 to 80% less than similar luxury labels because they partner directly with ethical factories, cutting out the middleman markup entirely. And it's not just apparel. Quince brings that same affordability to hotel quality bedding, plush bath towels, and sleek home staples. Upgrade your everyday with Quince. Download the Quince app for app-exclusive offers or go to quince.com/campus. Get free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada and the UK too. That's quince.com/campus.
I'm Serena Williams, and I'm healthier on Row. I've lost 34 pounds in a year with GLP-1s, diet, and exercise. On Row, you can access GLP-1 options, including the first FDA-approved GLP-1 pill for weight loss. Go to row.co/journey to see if you qualify. 14 to 20% average weight loss in 1 year in non-diabetics with obesity or overweight with a weight-related medical condition versus 2.2% to 3.1% in placebo arm. RX only. To stay informed about serious side effects, go to row.co/safety.
It's a cool and cloudy day in Portland, Oregon, mid-February 1965. A group is filing into the chapel of Elliott Hall at Reed College. The atmosphere is energetic. By 7:30 that night, the chapel is packed with students. A few faculty members and Portlanders intermingle with the students. Suddenly, the doors open for 8 silver-shirted, black-booted men. They each take positions in the aisles as the room falls quiet. All have gathered today to hear the words of Roger Gerber and Edmund Crump, two leaders of the National Party of America. The National Party of America was a neo-Nazi-affiliated, openly anti-Semitic far-right organization with the objective of making the U.S. a white utopia. Virtually all in the room are starkly opposed to the National Party, but they've gathered for an open and civil discussion. Decades later, this moment would be revisited in the aftermath of the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, as a reminder of the seemingly forgotten era in which open discourse was welcome on campus.
There was an article published in 2017 about this moment, about the National Party giving a talk at Reed. And in that article, a 70-ish man in the front of the audience stood up and spoke. And this is in quotes. "My name is Benjamin," he said. "I'm president of another right-wing organization here in Oregon. I've been watching and listening to what's happened here tonight. I just want to say that if the National Party of America can come to this college and speak to an audience that obviously is overwhelmingly opposed politically to everything the party stands for and still get a fair hearing as they have tonight, then," and this is in parentheses, "here Mr. Benjamin's voice rose in crescendo, there's hope for America yet!" Exclamation point. And then he sat down amid roars of applause.
I'm Ian Mont. This week on Campus Files, when fascists were welcome, the National Party of America at Reed College. The 1960s were a turbulent time, to say the least, all across the United States. Social and political unrest, assassinations, and scandals filled the headlines practically every day. And it was no different in Oregon.
My name is Seth Kotler. I'm a historian. I teach U.S. history at Willamette University in Salem, Oregon. And now I'm writing about the history of far-right extremism in the U.S. and the way that it intersects with the history of the conservative movement and the Republican Party from the 1960s up to the present.
I wanted to talk to Seth because Then, like now, college campuses were seen as sort of a litmus test for political speech. And it's interesting to look back at a story like this one in a moment like today. While there were a number of extremist groups at the time, today we're going to focus on one group in Oregon called the National Party of America.
So the National Party was maybe a dozen people, maybe 20 tops. It's probably smaller than the Proud Boys today. And, you know, they would show up outside of a talk by someone who is an advocate from the Jewish community with a sign that says Judaism is communism and offensive slurs for Jews.
The National Party of America, or NPA for short, staged dozens of direct actions in the early 1960s. They protested outside of newspaper offices, calling them, quote, Jewish-controlled media. They also picketed Jewish-owned stores. In one case in 1965, they tailed an anti-police brutality protest in a Confederate flag-covered pickup truck. There are a few figures at the center of this story. You'll meet one of them later, but for now, we'll start with Edmund Crump and Roger Gerber, two native Portlanders.
They lived in the same block in a kind of working class part of Southeast Portland. They're roughly the same age. They're in high school and they're kind of politically curious, interested young men in a time of kind of rising far-right extremism. And they seem like sort of generally alienated young men who were looking for something a little edgier, something a little more exciting. And so they find Walter Huss because he is probably the most prominent right-wing political figure. He was just a guy who just made a huge stink in town.
Walter Huss is the sort of figure who would be very recognizable today. A very loud and visible far-right conservative who cried political persecution anytime he didn't get exactly what he wanted. He at one point even claimed his problems were caused by enemies in the Jewish communist cabal running Portland's government. While their views may be different, Huss's tactics sound a lot like Alex Jones, for example.
It's a very familiar kind of persona. So Walter Huss gets a radio show. He has a show that's on the radio 5 days a week for 15 minutes. He publishes a newspaper called the Portland Eagle. If you're a politically interested young person and you're looking for like some gadfly who's being, as you perceive it, persecuted by the powers that be in Portland and at City Hall, he's your man, right? He's just like out of central casting. And Walter Huss plays this up to the hilt, right? In terms of he's a brave truth teller and everyone else is afraid of the truths that he has to share with everyone.
To give you a sense of Huss's beliefs, he was part of David Duke's National Association for the Advancement of White People. He was also a fundamentalist minister and an outspoken opponent of communism, which he described as a Jewish plot. His reach may have been local, but he and his acolytes, including the young Edmund Crump and Roger Gerber, were on the radar of federal authorities.
Right after JFK is assassinated, the Portland FBI office is asked to check in on the people who they think might be trying to stir up trouble. And the guys from the National Party are some of the first people they contact.
So how did this party of probably no more than 20 people ever get invited to talk at Reed?
This was a thing in the 1960s. So George Lincoln Rockwell, for example, the head of the American Nazi Party, a big source of his income was speaking at universities. And these universities did this not because they agreed with George Lincoln Rockwell or because they agreed with the National Party, but it was a gesture to show their open-mindedness. And this was also a time when the American right was obsessed with the idea that they were being discriminated against. So therefore, as a gesture to show that they weren't close-minded, they're like, come, this is what we do. Give us your best. Give us your arguments. Give us your ideas. We will shoot them down. We will not agree with them. But in the process of doing it, we will demonstrate something beneficent and positive about American democracy.
That's the sort of thinking that some argue is entirely absent from colleges today. So how did it actually play out when fascists visited Reed College in 1965? That's after the break.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
The first few weeks back at school set the tone for the entire year. But with new teachers, schedules, and expectations, it can feel like a lot. If you're looking to help your child start strong and stay confident, I've been using IXL to make that transition so much easier. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, it adapts to each child's level and pace, making it easy to spot and close learning gaps in just a few minutes a day before those gaps can snowball. Plus, it's trusted nationwide. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL, and it's used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. It's an easy, cost-effective way to get kids back into a learning routine and walking into class feeling ready and reassured. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. Listeners can get an exclusive 20% off an IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLlearning.com/audio. Visit IXLlearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
I'm Mark DeVoto. I was born in 1940. I'm 86 years old, and I taught music at the college level.
Mark was a young professor of about 25 years old back in 1965. He was teaching music at Reed College and remembers hearing for the first time that the NPA was coming to speak.
There was a story in the Reed College Quest, which was their weekly newspaper run by the students, saying that the National Party of America would be coming to Reed to speak about their platform, and that students should realize that the National Party of America was a right-wing organization that had echoes of the Nazi Party. I couldn't imagine why they would come to Reed except for publicity reasons and possibly to stir up trouble, which is what I was most worried about.
I imagine that part of why Mark was anxious about this was that Reed would be far from a receptive audience to the National Party of America. Reed College is a pretty unique place. Founded back in 1908, it was a direct reaction to the sort of conventional, elite East Coast education of the time. It was founded explicitly with no fraternities, elite social clubs, or varsity sports, with the aim of being intensely intellectual and academic. Oregon's local PBS station produced a special about Reed back in 2011. Here's a little bit from that special.
Each Reed senior has produced the equivalent of a master's degree thesis and defended it before a panel of professors. And this, only after having passed a grueling qualifying exam in junior year.
It's since developed a reputation as an intensely progressive school with a left-leaning student body. And this was the case even back in the 60s. It's become so connected to the school's reputation that it was mentioned even in the first few minutes of that PBS piece.
But for all its impressive rigor, Reed has aroused some negative impressions over the years.
When I was looking at coming to Reed, people would say, oh, but that's a hotbed of communists. How
could you think? I still have a T-shirt that has the Reed College unofficial seal with the griffin in the middle, but then a border that says communism, atheism, free love.
And this reputation is something that was well known around Portland.
Reed has always had a reputation as being a kind of iconoclastic, more politically left institution, though, like all institutions, it's comprised of a pretty wide range of folks with different political outlooks. But it had a reputation in Portland as being on the left. I'm sure the National Party guys had complained about Reed. All the right wingers just hated Reed and would point out what a nest of communists it was.
Edmund Crump even went so far as to call Reed College a sink of race mixing treason in a newsletter ahead of the visit.
I just chose to go. I had no idea what it was going to be like.
Were you nervous?
I was a little when I got there, and when I saw Mark Loeb, who was organizing the appearance. He was chairman of the Reed College Public Affairs Board that invited speakers to appear. And I put on a yarmulke that I carried with me, and he laughed.
As Mark recalls, the room was packed, full of students and a few faculty. A few minutes later, the NPA arrived.
There were about 8 of their members, and they were all wearing silver shirts and black boots, and they took up positions, I would say, spaced along the sides of the hall.
The room fell silent as the silver-shirted men marched in. Now, this event was 60 years ago, and Mark's memory is remarkably good after all that time, but Seth learned that the whole event was recorded on an old reel-to-reel tape housed in the Reed College Library.
And so I said, can I come listen? Eventually, I was able to go there and sit with headphones and a little Walkman CD player and listen to the CD and take notes.
I actually made the same call to the Reed Library. Unfortunately, they refused to share a copy of the recording. However, Seth made detailed notes. The event began with Roger Gerber taking the mic and saying,
I'm Secretary General of the National Party. That makes me the number 2 bigot in the United States of America. And I'll introduce the number 1 bigot a little later.
The number 1 bigot is Edmund Crump, who will be speaking later. Gerber continues.
My object tonight, of course, is to make bigots out of as many people here as I can. And I think that I'm going to be, to a large measure, successful. Because I trust that when Mr. Crump and I leave here tonight, you people will either hate Jew, communist, race-mixing traitors, in which case you'll be bigots, or you'll hate us, in which case you'll be bigots.
This line gets Gerber some laughs and light applause. Gerber goes on.
The aims of the National Party of America are quite simple. We aim to create a free nation of free men so powerful as to fear no one. We intend to create this through simple truth. We believe that the white culture and the civilization of North America is destined to take up where European civilization has left off. We believe that there is a golden age ahead for the North American continent.
I'm curious, what did you gather was the reception in the room listening to the recording?
I mean, the reception in the room was pretty sarcastic and dismissive. Like, there's a moment when Edmund Crump is citing Nietzsche, but he mispronounces the name. And this kind of ripple of sarcastic laughter goes through the crowd, like, oh, so cute. This guy doesn't even know how to pronounce the name Nietzsche. And it was like they came to the zoo. It was like Reed students that there was going to be this weird animal called a Nazi or a fascist who was going to come speak at Reed and go look at the crazy Nazi and point and laugh. So that's my general sense. I mean, I will say that they let him speak. There were moments when they laughed at them. There were, seemed to be a few moments that they maybe laughed with them. Like maybe they were sort of surprised that like, oh, that's kind of clever, like what this guy just said. Because they're not dummies, right? I suspect that some of the folks in the audience who expected just to, you know, see some kind of like knuckle-dragging, mouth-breathing fools were kind of surprised that these guys actually read stuff and knew some history, even if only selectively.
I'm curious if there are any other particular moments that really stood out to you listening to it.
The one moment sitting in the archive when my jaw just kind of dropped was Edmund Crump opens his part of the speech by calling for the building of a wall in 1965. And then he goes on to say, we've got to build a white citadel. We've got to build a wall. We're going to start where the Rio Grande goes into the Gulf of Mexico, and it's going to extend to Baja, California. And it's going to be approximately 100 feet high and 50 feet thick. And then there's laughter from the crowd. And it's going to be topped with barbed wire, and it's going to have booby traps. It's going to have about 3 miles of plowed earth and barbed wire on either side. It's going to be mined. It's going to have everything. As a matter of fact, it's going to be so dense that if my plan or my projected concept is realized, people will not be able to enter the United States of America. And then he says, and now on top of that, and we've built our nation along racial lines, after we've established the white citadel, we're going to have to strengthen our immigration laws. He says, right now, there are 3 million people in the United States illegally, and hence the wall.
After both Gerber and Crump gave their speeches, they took questions from the audience. Mark remembers one student who got a particularly large laugh.
Well, I certainly remember Fred Wynyard. He was of Japanese ancestry, but he was from California, and I remember he had a perfect California accent, but he pretended to have a Japanese-American accent. He gritted his teeth together and spoke through his teeth and said, "Do you intend to give anybody the benefit of a doubt?" And that got a roar of laughter because all the students knew who he was and saw that he was putting them on.
Then came the moment you heard about at the beginning of the episode, when an elderly man stood up to congratulate Reed students on giving the NPA a fair hearing. Here's Seth quoting what he said.
"I just want to say that if the National Party of America can come to this college and speak to an audience that obviously is overwhelmingly opposed politically to everything the party stands for and still get a fair hearing as they have tonight, then," and this is in parentheses, here Mr. Benjamin's voice rose in crescendo, "there's hope for America yet!" Exclamation point. And then he sat down amid roars of applause.
Mark remembers that moment well.
"I don't think I've ever been more proud of being among a bunch of students who kept order so well and yet made their own feelings clear. This National Party, it may have been right-wing, but it was really to be laughed at more than anything else."
In fact, in 2017, Mark wrote a piece for Reed's Campus magazine about this visit. Both my sister and I were college students at the time, and my sister was actually at Reed. I actually remember talking about Mark's piece as a family amidst all the campus protests that year. Mark actually wrote this piece in response to a protest movement at Reed.
"There had been a sit-in, I guess in Humanities 110, by an activist group of students who took over the humanities lecture and prevented it from proceeding because they felt that the humanities course was not dealing with appropriate issues."
Mark could see his former campus up in arms over speech, and he could remember being a young professor in the turbulent 60s witnessing a similar situation play out.
"I'm all in favor of students being allowed to march on campus or even put up tents on campus, at least temporarily. But I get upset when I think of classes not being allowed to proceed because some students don't think they should."
While it wasn't an identical situation, Mark saw a lesson to be learned in this story, that as he saw it, sometimes it's more effective to engage with these ideas rather than silence them. As for Seth, he learned about this event through Mark's piece as well. And in particular, he recalls the sense of pride Mark felt.
"So this is about, you know, celebrating the open-minded civility of Reed students who are willing to kind of hear out this group. And this elderly man who's not part of the Reed community is kind of testifying, you know, to how awesome this event was and how proud the people at Reed should be and how great America is that we're a country where this can happen."
It's the picture-perfect idea of what many people argue is lacking on campus today. But Seth, with his very specific background in Pacific Northwest right-wing extremism, noticed something here.
"I didn't know whether that interaction was going to be on the tape. And that moment arrived on the tape. I was like, oh my God, holy shit, this is the moment that the guy wrote about in this article."
Seth realized that this elderly man wasn't just some ordinary member of the community. His name was Dale Benjamin. And he's the final key figure I mentioned earlier.
"And I just happened to know who Dale Benjamin was. He was the Oregon head of the National States Rights Party, which was a domestic terror organization that was responsible for church and synagogue bombings all across the South and for the murder of several civil rights activists. He was also someone who in the 1920s was a Klansman who was convicted for serial sexual assaults of children when he was working in his capacity as a preacher. And so he was basically a career Nazi. So he's not just some cuddly old conservative who's in the audience. He is an incredibly sinister figure. And he also happens to be the mentor of Edmund Crump and Roger Gerber, who had been their mentor for over 2 years.
This revelation to me begs the question, do we look at this moment differently knowing who spoke those words? Does this moment of pride look different knowing that it was a career domestic terrorist speaking? Someone who Seth believes could have been purposely planted in the audience. More after the break.
Baseball fans, think you know who's hitting a homer today? Well, FanDuel is giving you a free chance to call your shot with daily dingers. Joining the action is easy. Just make your free pick on who's hitting a home run in their game, and if you're right, you'll get a profit boost to use on your next bet for a chance at extra winnings. You've got nothing to lose and a lot to gain. And don't forget, you can make a free pick every day during the MLB season. It's just another reason why FanDuel is the home for home runs. So, are you ready to play your game today? Join all the action at FanDuel.com/podcast. That's FanDuel.com/podcast to play daily dingers and make your free pick on who's hitting a homer. Play ball and swing for the fences on FanDuel, an official partner of the MLB.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
I've always dreamed of being able to order my coffee in Italian like a local, instead of just pointing at the menu and hoping for the best. There's something about speaking another language with real confidence that opens up a whole new world of experiences. That's why I'm so excited about Rosetta Stone Sapphire. It's their biggest launch in over a decade. It takes that research-backed method we all know and trust and adds fresh, cutting-edge features that make it easier than ever to go from knowing a few phrases to speaking naturally about the topics you actually care about. What I love is that you aren't just memorizing vocabulary lists. You learn entirely in your new language through visuals and audio, just like you did as a kid. One of my favorite new features is chat missions. It turns conversation practice into a game, putting you in real-world scenarios, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions, and giving you missions to complete. You get real-time feedback along the way, so you build that confidence before you ever have to use your skills in the real world. If you want to take your language skills to the next level, don't wait to try Rosetta Stone Sapphire. Listeners of this podcast can get 20% off their Rosetta Stone Sapphire subscription when they sign up today. This gets you access to Rosetta Stone Sapphire in 25 languages. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10 to redeem your 20% off. That's rosettastone.com/rs10.
It's really hard to tell how to look at this moment at Reed College, and how it may color the fight around speech today. I asked Seth how he looks at this story today.
I mean, to me, this is a moment when ideas that were considered fairly heretical in the context of the kind of post-World War II Cold War liberal America, small L liberal America, right? The idea that America belonged to Christian people and that Jews are not legitimately Americans. The idea that America belongs to white people and people who aren't white are not legitimately Americans. That those ideas were very much contested in the 1960s. So the nation was in the midst of this challenging conversation about what does it mean to be a multiracial democracy in the modern world. And these guys were taking up a very strong position in that argument. A position that I think a lot of folks at Reed thought was part of the American past. That right now in the 1960s, we are in the process of defeating those ideas and making those ideas part of our national past and no longer relevant in our national future.
But Seth argues, we're actually in a very different place now. The white nationalist ideas that Gerber and Crump espoused are no longer fringe.
We are living in that future now when those ideas are not just part of our past. They are very much a part of our present. And this was the future that people like Dale Benjamin and Edmund Crump and Roger Gerber were trying to call into existence. I think part of what's happening, and this might be reading too much into it, but the uncomfortable laughter that happens during this event, I think is in part maybe some part of people being like, yikes, like, I could see why this stuff might have legs, right? Like, you know, I could see like my cousin or my aunt or my neighbor kind of hearing this speech and being like, well, you know, those guys kind of have a point.
We've wrestled with this issue of speech on campus a number of times in this show. Last season, we had an episode on the story of Evan Charney, a Duke professor who was ostensibly let go after a student complained about being challenged too much in his course. And earlier this season, we covered the University of Austin, a brand new school which, at least on the surface, aims to push back against ideological hegemony on campus. And we keep coming back to stories about speech because it's probably the one thing about college life that most people disagree on. We can basically all agree that there's a crisis of cost, that Title IX protections and investigations are deeply flawed, that hazing is a problem, and on and on. But when it comes to speech, we are a mess. And I think that's because college represents a point of transformation in someone's life. And a college, especially a highly intellectual place like Reed, is a place where you're supposed to engage with challenging and sometimes distasteful ideas. So it's clear why people look back at this moment at Reed in 1965 as proof positive that being permissive with speech works. But there is another side to this. Here's Seth.
I don't think that's the only way to interpret what happened at Reed in 1965. That the lesson is simply, if we just do what they did then the outcome will be the same. I don't think it works that way. I would say that part of what was happening in that moment, perhaps Dale Benjamin and the National Party kind of pulled one over on the Reed students by creating a situation in which they could accomplish their goal, which wasn't to convert anyone at Reed College into becoming a Nazi, but was instead designed just to create the impression that considering and taking seriously Nazi ideas is something that any good democratic society should do. And if you are opposed to it, then obviously you are an opponent to democracy.
I asked Mark if, with 60 years of hindsight, he would make the same decision to welcome the National Party to campus or not.
If you had to choose, allow the National Party to speak at Reed or don't invite them, would you have made the same decision that Mark Loeb did, or would you maybe think differently?
Well, back then, most Reedies would have been willing to take the risk because Reed College had a reputation of being tolerant of radicalism.
By tolerant of radicalism, Mark is referring to radical left ideas. Think of the communism, atheism, and free love t-shirt Mark mentioned. That was a reputation that Reed was actively fighting at the time.
There was a tour bus company that used to take tourists on a guide around the city, and when they went past Reed College, the tour guide would say, "This is Reed College, famous communist college." And the college went to court to get the tour company to stop saying that. And the bus company complied.
I think Mark is getting at the final part of this story that makes it so complicated. Sure, on one hand, it's possible that this visit was a carefully orchestrated piece of political theater, designed to legitimize fascist ideas, part of a political project that over the last 60 years has found startling success. From that perspective, you could argue that it and any event like it shouldn't have been allowed to happen. But Mark points out the fundamental truth that a school like Reed can easily lose public trust. And when that trust is broken, that opens the door for the political attacks and funding cuts we're seeing today. If you asked me about this story a couple years ago, I would have said that Reed made a mistake allowing this to go ahead. I don't feel that way anymore. So if you're a student or a professor on campus today, what do you do? Where do you draw the line? If you've got a story idea, we would love to hear about it. Send us an email at campusfilespod@gmail.com. And if you're loving this podcast, be sure to click follow on your favorite podcast app so you never miss an episode. While you're there, leave us a review and a 5-star rating. Campus Files is an Odyssey original podcast hosted by Margot Gray and Ian Mont. Our executive producers are Leah Reese-Dennis and Lloyd Lockridge. Campus Files is produced by Ian Mont and Margot Gray. Sound design and engineering by Andy Jaskowitz and Zach Clark. Legal support by Laura Berman and Melissa Jean. Original music by Davey Sumner.
Special thanks to Maura Curran, Josephina Francis, Hilary Schuff, Eric Donnelly, Kate Hutchison-Rose, Sean Cherry, Kurt Courtney, and Lauren Vieira.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.